Okay, Erev Tov, everybody. This week, we're going to do a little bit of a different kind of thing. I'm not going to talk about the parasha. We're going to talk about Yom Yerushalayim, Haba Aleinu L'Tova, next week. And it's not so much Rambam versus Ramban, although there might be a little bit of verses, but two different approaches that we see in these great giants towards Yerushalayim, who may have actually been there. So we'll discuss that as well. But before we do that, I want to contrast their, well, not contrast, but I want to inform their approaches with the famous American author Mark Twain, Samuel Clemens, who wrote two relatively famous works that are related in some way to the Jews. One of them was actually called Concerning the Jews, which is, people generally know only the last paragraph of the whole essay. Which is definitely worth reading, but the whole essay is worth reading. But this is another one called The Innocents Abroad, which is the story basically of Mark Twain traveling, I think traveling the world. I'm not exactly, I meant to look up beforehand all the different places that he traveled, but eventually he definitely made it to the land of Palestine. And over here, he describes how he came with a group, Christians, and they were very excited to be in Israel and tried to make their way over to Yerushalayim. And we'll read some of it. He says, after a while, we came to a shapeless mass of ruins, which still bears the name of Bethel. And he describes how Jacob lay down and had his vision of angels. So he's a believer. And then the pilgrims took what was left of the hallowed ruin, and we pressed on toward the goal of our crusade, renowned Jerusalem. Crusade is a very loaded word in this sentence. But it was nowhere near the crusade 600 years later. There was hardly a tree or a shrub anywhere. Even the olive and the cactus, those fast friends of a worthless soil, had almost deserted the country. This is the big line that everybody quotes. No landscape exists that is more tiresome to the eye than that which bounds the approaches to Jerusalem. The only difference between the roads and the surrounding country, perhaps, is that there are more rocks in the road than in the surrounding country. But eventually he makes it. In the middle of the day, the ancient bit of wall and crumbling arches began to line the way, and we toiled up one more hill, and every pilgrim and every sinner swung his hat on high. Jerusalem, very excited. Perched on its eternal hills, white and domed and solid, massed together and hooped with high gray walls, the venerable city gleamed in the sun. So small, that's his most vivid impression of Jerusalem. Why, it was no larger than an American village of 4,000 inhabitants and no larger than an ordinary Syrian city of 30,000. Jerusalem numbers only 14,000 people. There's no call for tears. Tears would have been out of place. The thoughts Jerusalem suggests are full of poetry, sublimity, and more than all, dignity. Such thoughts do not find their appropriate expression in the emotions of the nursery. So he doesn't want to make it into an emotional thing. He wants to make it into a religious, dignified experience. He describes how they enter the narrow, crooked streets. He's very excited. And then he says the population of Jerusalem is composed of Muslims, Jews, Greeks, Latins, Armenians, Syrians, Copts, Abyssinians, etc., etc. 100 of the latter sect are all that dwell now in this birthplace of Christianity. It's his perspective. He says, rags, wretchedness, poverty, and dirt. Those signs and symbols that indicate the presence of Muslim rule, more surely than the crescent flag itself, abound. Lepers, cripples, the blind, and the idiotic assail you on every hand, and they know but one word of but one language, apparently, the eternal bakshish, which I think is a request for charity. To see the numbers of maimed, malformed, and diseased humanity that throng the holy places and obstruct the gates, one might suppose that the ancient days had come again, that the angel of the Lord is expected to descend at any moment to stir the waters of Bethesda. Jerusalem is mournful and dreary and lifeless. I would not desire to live here. Okay, he's just traveled around the world to get there, and that's what he has to say. So why do I bring this up? Because the truth is that there's good news and bad news here, right? The bad news is that Jerusalem is in a sorry state at the time. But the good news is that it was predicted. Ramban in Sefer Vayikra, towards the end of the Vayikra, just a few weeks ago, last week, in Parashat Bechukotai, when we're reading the Tokacha, so it says, V'shamu alea oyveichem. So he says, what it says over here, V'shamu alea oyveichem, Besorah tova. Interesting to see how he says this. Besorah tova mevaseret b'chol hagaliyot she'ein arteinu mekabelet et oyveinu. Our land does not receive our enemies. V'gam zu raya gedolav haftacha lanu ki lo timtza b'kol ha'yishuv eretz asher hi tova urechava v'asher haita noshevet me'olam. He says, this is an amazing thing. You won't find in the whole world a land, a civilized land, which had been inhabited and good and taken care of forever, and which is so desolate as it is now. Because from the time that we left in the second Beit HaMikdash, it has not received anyone that will be able to take care of it. Everybody tries to settle it, and nobody succeeds. Hashem does not help them, doesn't allow them. So Ramban predicts what Mark Twain would find. Okay, so thus far, we see what the Ramban says about the current state or the present state of Jerusalem when he gets there. What does he think about it originally? So Ramban's view about Yerushalayim can be found in Parshat Lech Lecha. He says, "Malki Tzedek Melech Shalim," one of the kings that Avram encounters as he's fighting the war against the four kings, is after he's victorious, he meets Malki Tzedek Melech Shalim. What's Shalim? What does Rashi say?
Yerushalayim.
Rashi says immediately that Shalim is Yerushalayim, is proto-Yerushalayim. And the Ramban echoes that. He Yerushalayim, Kinyan Shneamar, Vahi B'Shalim Sukkot. Everybody who's there is called Tzedek. Why is the king or the leader or the mayor of Yerushalayim always called Tzedek? Because everybody always knew that this place was the best of places. They knew that it was a special place. Oh, she'adu malato b'kabbalah, or maybe they knew it through tradition. Shehum b'chuban k'neged Beit HaMikdash shomala. They knew that it was connected to Beit HaMikdash shomala spiritually. Shesham shchinato shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shenikra tzedek. So Ramban offers two possibilities. One is that it's physically the best place. Okay, it's mivchar hamakamot be'emtza hayishuv. It's the cradle of civilization. Essentially, is what that means. Or they knew through traditional means somehow that it corresponds to a, you know, quote unquote place in a spiritual world where Hashem's Shechina dwells. It's called Tzedek. Reverashit Rabba Hamakom Hazem Atzdikat Yoshav Malki Tzedek Adoni Tzedek Nikrei Yerushalayim Tzedek Shneamar Tzedek Yalin Ba. So Ramban over here is explaining that there is something inherently and eternally special about Yerushalayim, either physically or more likely spiritually. It's a place where the Shekhinah is most strongly felt. Okay? The truth is Rabbi Soloveitchik has the same idea. Rabbi Soloveitchik wonders why Avram continues past the outskirts of Canaan when he arrives. And he says, Kedusha attracts. This was perhaps the greatest discovery made by Avram. The generation of the flood thought that beauty is fascinating, etc., etc. Avram proclaimed to the world that Kedusha is the great attractive force. He entered Canaan from the north, and he was a shepherd, so he should have stayed there, because that's where the good fields are. But Rashi explains that Avram was going towards Yerushalayim. The holiness of Yerushalayim pulled him instinctively toward the south, like a bee is attracted to the nectar of the flower. So Rabbi Soloveitchik also over here is saying that even Avram could feel the Kedusha of Yerushalayim. They could sense it. So this is Ramban. What do you think the approach of Maimonides is going to be towards Yerushalayim? The same? Different?
He's probably going to say that Kedusha occurred when the Beit Mikdash was built there. So it wasn't intrinsic, but it was imposed upon.
Okay. Anybody agree, disagree?
I like that answer.
Okay. So let's see. There are at least two places that we have to look. So the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, I think we might have read this already, in part 3, chapter 45. He says, it's known that idolaters selected the highest places on high mountains where to build their temples and to place their images. Okay, so they build their places very, very high so they can be like a beacon. This is, you know, akin to the Christians building tall churches. Therefore, Abraham, our father, chose Mount Moriah, being the highest mountain in that country, and proclaimed there the unity of God. So Abraham thought, hey, that's a good idea. We should also do our services on a high mountain. But what did he do? He selected the west side of the mountain as the place toward which he turned his during his prayers. Why did he pick the west? So Rambam starts and says, because he thought that the most holy place was in the west. This is the meaning of the saying of our sages, the Shekhinah is in the west. And it's distinctly stated in the Talmud that our father Abraham chose the west side, the place where the most holy city, most holy was built. So Rambam says two things here. Number one, that it was important for Abraham to build, to do his Akedah on a mountain. But he chose specifically the west because that's where the Shekhinah is. That's what the Gemara says in Baba Basra. The Shekhinah was in the west.
Are we to believe that Har Moriah was the highest point in Yerushalayim, according to this?
No, I don't know. Don't know. That's what he says. It's the highest mountain in that country. Don't know. Not good at this. So he picked that one, and he did it specifically in the west, which, according to the Gemara, is because the Shekhinah is there. Now, what does that mean for the Rambam?
Can I interject one more thing? Yaakov choosing a high mountain, Avram choosing a high mountain, is the exact opposite of the choice of Har Sinai, which was the lower mountain.
That's true. Well, God chose Har Sinai. Avram chose Har Moriah. So what does this mean for the Rambam that the Shekhinah is in the west? So he says, Avram chose the west because also that's where the Beit HaMikdash was built. But what does it mean that the Shekhinah is in the west? So the Rambam says, I believe he did so because it was a general right to worship the sun as a deity. Okay, the sun is the easiest object in nature to treat as a god. Undoubtedly, all people turned then to the east, worshiping the sun. The sun rises in the east, in the Mizrah. Undoubtedly, so that's what they did. So Avram, therefore, turned Mount Moriah to the west, that is, the site of the sanctuary, and turned his back toward the sun. And the Israelites, when they abandoned their God and returned to the early bad principles, stood with their backs toward the temple of the Lord and their faces toward the east, and they worshiped the sun toward the east. Note this strange fact. So what do you make of that? What is the Rambam saying? Is it that the Shekhinah is in the west? Is it that the Beit HaMikdash is in the west? What's going on here?
It was based on the practices of the Avodah Zarah at the time.
What was based on the practice of Avodah Zarah at the time?
The fact that he faced west as opposed to east.
And what about the Beit HaMikdash?
The same. The Beit HaMikdash was according to him, was a kind of a compromise. It was, we'll bring Korbanot only in the Beit HaMikdash, only certain people, only certain times, as opposed to the Avodah Zarah, which is brought by anybody, anytime, anywhere.
Okay, and when the people brought the Korbanot, right? So which way would they be facing? Towards the west, it seems. Towards the west, that's the point. Which means they had their backs to the sun when they brought their korbanot. So the Rambam appears to be saying that was, I think, between the lines, he's saying secretly, that's what Chazal even meant. When we say the Shekhinah is in the west, it's because we face the west, because we're facing away from the sun.
Right? As long as it's not the evening, as long as it's not the afternoon.
Good thing we don't bring korbanot in the evening.
Okay.
So, and you don't see the sun in the evening either. So he says, and I do not doubt that the spot which Abraham chose in his prophetic spirit was known to Moses, our teacher, and to others, for Abraham commanded his children that on this place a house of worship should be built. Thus the Targum says distinctly, Abraham worshipped and prayed in that place, and he said, the coming generations will worship the Lord there. In other words, it almost sounds like Abraham was Koveya, but that's where it is. Now, nowhere in the Torah does it say that one day we'll build the Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, or in Shalem for that matter. Nowhere. It just says, L'shichno tidrashu, you have to find the place where you're going to find God, and you'll arrive there. Why? The Rambam says, for three practical reasons, the name of the place is not distinctly stated in the law, but indicated in the phrase, to the place which the Lord will choose. Okay? The Shechno to Jeshu Ovat Hashem. Makom Asher Yivchar. Sorry. Makom Asher Yivchar. First, number one, if the nations had learned that place was to be the center of the highest religious truths, they would occupy it or fight about it most perseveringly. Number one, that the non-Jewish nations would fight about Yerushalayim if they knew that it was so special. Second, those who were then in possession of it might destroy and ruin the place with all their might. The non-Jews who got possession of it, knowing that it's important to the Jews, might destroy it. And third, this is for the Jews themselves. Every one of the 12 tribes would desire to have this place in its borders and under its control. This would lead to divisions and discords, such as were caused by the desire for the priesthood. Therefore, it was commanded that the temple should not be built before the election of a king who would order its erection and thus remove the cause of discord. According to the Rambam, the specific order of how things go is that first you appoint a king and then you build the Beit HaMikdash. And he says, it's critical that it be that way, because to build the Beit HaMikdash and to choose Yerushalayim as the capital city would have caused discord, because who says that Yehuda should get it and that Binyamin should get it? Maybe Yisachar should get it, or maybe Naphtali. They would all start fighting. So first you have to have a king that everybody obeys and listens to, and then you can determine where to build the Beit HaMikdash. Can we actually yes, Barbara, go ahead.
Sorry. My Tanakh is not good enough. How did David HaMelech choose? Why did he choose that place to say that the temple, the Beit HaMikdash, would be there?
We know that how he paid for it. He paid for it with collecting money from all of Klal Yisrael. Yeah. So that actually is a fulfillment of
it. Pay for it. No, how was it decided that that's
He asked a Navi. That's the answer. Yeah. Was it Achia Shulami? Who was it? Or was it Natan? I don't know. Martin, who was it? Was it Natan?
I imagine it was Natan, yeah.
Right. He was his Navi. Which is the proper way to do it. You're supposed to ask a Navi, and Navi is supposed to help you figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be how he figured it out. Rav Shmuel Eliyahu has an article where he addresses this. Can you still hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
Oh, okay. I lost one. Okay, interesting. My headphones are running out of battery. So, still hear me?
Yes.
Okay,
absolutely.
So, Rav Shmuel Eliyahu says, Kol bracha nistar drak mitchilata, kamot tzemach nishtal benizra mitachat adama b'makom nistar. All bracha is always hidden at the beginning, like a seed that, or a piece of vegetation that sprouts. It starts out in the ground, it's hidden. Over here as well, the place was hidden, and then it became revealed, and it was beautiful. That's why he says the hiding of the spot of Binyan Bayit HaRishon, nobody tried to stop David from building the Bayit HaRishon. There was no arguing about it. There was no fighting about it. There was no sabotaging it. But we know that in the building of the second Beit HaMikdash, actually there was sabotage, right? Koresh gave us permission to build, and then we started to build, and then we were prevented, and then we had to wait. And it was a whole big to-do. Once something becomes clear and everybody knows about it, there's fighting about it. It's much better to have a sneak attack and to do something under the covers. We see already with the building of the third Beit HaMikdash, okay, this is where Shmuel Eliyahu was a religious Zionist rabbi, with the building of the third Beit HaMikdash, we see the Rambam's concerns coming to the fore. We know that the Muslims are, they're claiming ownership. They think that we shouldn't even have any presence on the mount at all. They're also destroying artifacts and places on Har HaBayit. וגם בכך, the most painful part, שהיהודים חלוקים בדעותיהם סביב השייכות שלנו להר מוריה. Even amongst the Jews, we're having fights. גם כאן לא רוצים לחששות את ההתקרבות של עולם השם לבית ששם השם נקרא עליו, והוא יבנה בניין העולם. So he says, the Rambam's three concerns that I mentioned in the Morning Bookum, all three of them are relevant to us today.
Oh, that's the second headphone. Now I'm going to hear you from my computer. Everybody still hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, good. Yes.
All right, good. So the Rambam's three concerns come true. So now I ask again, what's your take? Is the Rambam saying that there's something inherently kadosh about Yerushalayim or no? Like the Ramban clearly did.
No.
So what's the value of Yerushalayim?
It has the Beit HaMikdash.
Okay. All right. And what happens when the Beit HaMikdash is not there, by the way?
Well, that's a big machloket, isn't it?
Oh, good. So here we have to look at the Rambam in Hilchos Beis HaBechira. This is in his Mishnah Torah. This is going to be halachic part. So in Halacha Yud Dalet in Perek Vav, there are just three halachot that we have to see. Koma kom shalona asa b'kol elu u'kaseidu azay en kadosh gamur. If you don't follow the instructions of how to make the place kadosh, it won't be kadosh. How did Ezra make Yerushalayim Kadosh? There was no king. There was no Urim Betumim. The second Beit HaMikdash, how did it become Kadosh? So did Ezra bring Kedusha to Yerushalayim?
Now, is it saying that there's nothing intrinsically holy about Jerusalem, but the fact that the Beit HaMikdash was built there by Shlomo has kind of imbued it with sanctity? Is that what he's...
Yes, and he's going further and saying that Ezra actually did nothing to the Kedusha of Yerushalayim, yeah, because it was remained from the time of Shlomo.
Okay? Yes.
So we're going to ignore the Ravid for a second. In Halacha Tetvav, Lefichach Makrivino Karbonot Kulban Afa Bishen Sham Bayit Banui, the Rambam's famous Shita is that we could still bring Karbonot right now if we wanted to. V'ochlin Kotchik Adashim Mekola Azara, Afa Bishachareva. And Halacha Tetzayin, he says, Lama Ani Omer B'mikdash Yerushalayim Kedusha Rishona Kitchel Atid Lavo. Why do I say that in Yerushalayim specifically, the Kedusha exists even from the time of the first Beit HaMikdash? The Rambam's other position, his parallel position, is that in the rest of Eretz Yisrael, there was no Kedusha that lasted from the first Beit HaMikdash. The Kedusha that exists in the rest of Eretz Yisrael now only comes from the second Beit HaMikdash. The Kedusha from the first Beit HaMikdash, pag tokef, it expired, it went away. So in what way is Yerushalayim different from the rest of Eretz Yisrael? לפי שקדושת המקדש וירושלים מבני השכינה, ושכינה אינה בטלה. Because the Kedusha of Yerushalayim comes from the Shechina, and the Shechina doesn't go away. Whereas the Kedusha, what about the Kedusha of the rest of Eretz Israel? So first he points out about Yerushalayim, והרי הוא אומר, והשימותי את מקדשיכם, זה פסוק, that he will destroy our מקדשים, ואמרו חכמים, אף פי ששמעו מן, בקדושתן הם עומדים. Even though they're shmamim, right, they're destroyed, they're still called mikdashim, which means that they're still kadosh. The kedusha of Eretz Israel comes from the conquering of Eretz Israel by Yehoshua, and the moment that conquering went away because we were kicked out, that kedusha went away, and it only returned when Ezra came back to Eretz Israel and was machzik the land. So the Rambam says there's a difference between Yerushalayim and the rest of Eretz Israel in that Yerushalayim is special because it has the Shechina, and the Shechina never goes away. So again, is there anything inherently special about Yerushalayim itself? Is the land alive with Kedusha? So for example, the Ramban said that everybody knew that Yerushalayim was special. And in what way was it special? Because it corresponds to the Kedusha of the Shechina in the Beit HaMikdash Shel Ma'ale. Does the Rambam have that? Okay. But the Rambam does have something, doesn't he? Because he says that even now, as we speak, there is Kedusha in Yerushalayim, even though there's no Beit HaMikdash. And where does that come from?
Is he saying it comes from the fact there was a Beit HaMikdash, which is like kept, you know, imbued it with Kedusha that doesn't go?
It would seem that that's what the Rambam is saying. I have two hesitations with that. One is that, as we've seen, the Rambam didn't really view the Mikdash formally as a house for the Shekhinah. That was the Ramban's term, right? Makom HaShekhinah, that's the point of the Mikdash, was to house the Shekhinah. According to the Rambam, what's the point of the Beit HaMikdash?
Korbanot.
It's a place to do Korbanot. It's just a place. It's a place with really nice furniture that inspires people, that puts them in a certain kind of mood, that focuses them. But the place itself doesn't seem to be special. So why would the Rambam say this anyways? So I think the idea is that once it's been designated as a place where the Shekhinah is, in the sense that we go there to serve, to bring korbanot, it needs to be respected. And you need to treat it with that kedusha. That was one reservation. We'll get to the other reservation soon. But first, we have to look at the Ravid, the famous Ravid. Ravid disagrees with the Rambam. He says, "B'kedusha rishona shekidsha Shlomo." He says, "Amar Avraham, svarat atzmohi." Says the Rambam's making this up. "V'lo yadati ma'enlo," and I don't know where he got it from. "B'kama mekomot b'mishnah imein mikdash yirkav." We're going to get into this whole terminology, but basically the Ravid doesn't think that there's any basis for the Rambam in the Gemara. This is very debatable. But what he ends up saying is that the words Kedusha Rishona and Kedusha Shnia don't ever refer to Yerushalayim in the Gemara. They only refer to the greater Eretz Israel. Aval Yerushalayim leMikdash lo amar lefishaya yodea Ezra shahamikdash Yerushalayim atidim leishtanot ulitkadesh kedush acher olami bekvod Hashem leolam kach niglami misod Hashem liRe'av. It's a famous line from the Ravid, which basically means that he's saying, I have ruach hakodesh and I know that I'm right. Lefichach hanichnas at Hashem ein bo karet. So the Ravid says that Ezra never imbued Yerushalayim and the Beit HaMikdash with eternal Kedusha, because he knew that it would be destroyed and that one day there would be a future Beit HaMikdash. So why would he do that? And therefore the Ravid says that nowadays, if you go into Yerushalayim, there's no karet. If you go into Beit HaMikdash, onto Har HaBayit, there's no karet, whereas the Rambam says that there is. I would argue that in a certain sense, the Ravid is even more extreme than the Rambam, because he's saying not only does the Kedusha of Yerushalayim not retained, but it never, it's not inherent either, it seems, according to the Ravid. Because if it was inherent, then it would still be a problem now. Okay, there's one other reservation I have with the Rambam saying that the Shekhinah eina betela, right? This line, Shekhinah eina betela. There's a problem because the Gemara doesn't seem to agree. Rabbeinu Bechaye, one of the Talmidim of the Ramban, actually, he says, "Miyom shesharta shechina b'har Sinai v'matan Torah, lo zazem Yisrael ad shecharav bayit rishon." The Gemara says that from the time that the Shechina was in Har Sinai, it didn't leave Yisrael. It traveled with them to Eretz Yisrael and eventually to the Beit HaMikdash until the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. And then, what happened to the Shechina? Apparently, it abandoned. Yeah, it was gone.
Doesn't Hashem say that I go into exile with you? Is that what that means?
It would seem. He says even it doesn't even dwell amongst Israel. Because in the second Beit HaMikdash there was no Shechina. He says, I'm not saying it wasn't there at all, because that's a problem, right? That would be a big deal to say that there's no Shekhinah at all. But this is the Gemara Numa, it's what it says. Because we know that the Shekhinah dwells amongst Klal Yisrael when there are enough people. There's a rule. When there's 20,000 Jews, the Shekhinah is there. That's the rule. So there were 20,000 Jews. Shuvah Hashem, Rivavot Alfei Yisrael. What's Rivavot? Minimum?
Tens of thousands.
20,000. Minimum is 20,000. Uchti Rechav Alim Rabotim Alfei Shana'an Hashem Bam. Fine. So he says, so what's the meaning of it? Shalo Sharta Bo Tadir Kemo B'Vayit Rishon. It wasn't there all the time in a permanent fashion, like it was in Yerushalayim the first time around. And he bases this on the Gemara that where they say, based on the pasuk in Haggai, Ve'eretzebo I bikavda. This is a pasuk, Ve'eretzebo bikavda. It's a pasuk in Haggai. The only problem is that bikavda, how is it written in the Navi? With a missing hey. We pronounce it bikavda. There's a kamatz under the dalid, but it's without a hey. And the Gemara says, Chaser hey, lefisha chasru misham chamisha dvarim. It's missing a hey because the second Beit HaMikdash was missing five things. What were the five things it was missing? Aron. There was no Aron. Shemen HaMishcha. Eish, the Eish that would come down from Shamayim to burn up the Korban Tamid. That didn't happen. The Shechina and Urim V'tumim. Pretty amazing. Good night. Good night. Okay, good night.
Good night.
Okay, good night. Good night, Zaidi. Good. Umimneza. So this Shechina is described as just the Shechina and not Tiferet. Tiferet is like the glory. It's one of the five things that's missing. So in other words, according to Rabbeinu Bachaye, you don't have the full Shechina dwelling in Yerushalayim in the second Beit HaMikdash. There's definitely something missing.
Even is Rabbeinu Bachaye saying that there are two types of Shechina? There's a higher form and a lower form?
Yeah, 100%. The truth is, it reminds me, the Netziv says this. Martin, do you remember learning this in the Netziv? And it says that when Hashem was with Klal Yisrael in the Midbar at the beginning, he was mebchinat tiferet because there were miracles happening all the time. There was no physics; it was just everything was a miracle. And then the turning point was when they asked for spies to enter the land of Eretz Yisrael. They basically were saying, we don't want that. We can't handle it anymore. So Hashem went from being Tiferet to being a more naturalistic form of Shechina. He has a different term there, and I can't remember what the term was. He went from Tiferet to... I can't remember now. But basically what the Rebbe Chaya seems to be saying is that form of Tiferet, which left, was existing in the Beit HaMikdash for only the first Beit HaMikdash, but did not exist in the second. So yeah, there are different flavors. What's interesting is that Tashbetz, he doesn't think so. He says there's evidence and proof that the sanctity of the Mikdash in the city exists. Tashbetz, I think 18th century, he says, one of the miracles which occurred in Yerushalayim still remains. No one ever said to his fellow, this place is too narrow for me. For in the Beit HaKnesset in Yerushalayim, they provide for the locals throughout the year and it fills up Peh. When everyone gathers there and on Shavuot, the celebrants number over 300 people. 300 people, can you imagine? Everyone enters and has room to sit because it retains its sanctity. And this is the sign of the third Geula. Okay, the Tashbetz did not live in modern-day Yerushalayim and he did not go to Birkat Kohanim on the second day of Pesach. Although maybe he did and it was during Corona time. That could be possible. That's possible. I want to just contrast the Ramban's view that there is something special inherently about Yerushalayim versus the Rambam's view, which is that there is something special now about Yerushalayim because we build the Beit HaMikdash. It's a man-made kedusha that permeates and that persists, according to the Rambam. It persists even though the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. Now, we don't know if it persists in a physical way or if it just persists in a metaphorical, respect, reverential type of way. I don't know. But it definitely persists, according to the Rambam. We'll just end by pointing out that the Ramban definitely went to Yerushalayim. The Ramban fled Barcelona because he lost. Well, he won because he won a fight. Okay, that's how that used to be done. He won a fight with an apostate and had to flee Barcelona, and made his way over to Akko, and then eventually down to Yerushalayim. And he spent some time there. He gave shiurim there. He dedicated a shul there. He started a whole community. To this day, there are actually two Ramban shuls in Yerushalayim. One of them is the original one. And then he actually had to go back up to Akko and finish out his life there. But the Rambam supposedly also went to Yerushalayim. We know he went to Eretz Israel and that he had to leave because of the Crusades. The Christians. He had to leave. And apparently, this is an account which is somewhat in dispute. This is from the Sefer Charedim. It says, "V'chein matzati b'sof shita achat shehetik anale Rav Shmuel bar Avram," which I think might be Avram Shkayel. I don't know who that is. Be'Akko, he says he found this letter in Akko. Michtivat yad Arav Rabbeinu Meor Agola Harambam, says he found a letter written by the Rambam, and this is an Igaret which is printed in the Igrot of the Rambam. He says, "Leil achat b'Shabbat shel shayamim liyarech sivan yasati min hayam." So this is. It's coming up. This is 3 days before Shavuot. Yatzati min hayam b'shalom uvati la'Akko. That's when he arrived at Akko. V'nitzalti min hashmad v'higanu la'eretz Yisrael. V'yom zeh nadarti shehei sason v'simcha v'nishter matanot avyonim. Made a big party. Ani uveiti ad sof kol adorot. It says, from that day forward, apparently the family of the Rambam, they made a suda soda on the third day of Sivan. V'yom shlishi b'shabbat, on a Tuesday, which was the Arba Yamim L'Yerach Mar Cheshvan, this is much later, Yatzana Mi'ako La'alot Yerushalayim Tachat Sakana. They made their way over to Yerushalayim. V'nichnasti le'bayit ha'gadol v'ha'kadosh v'hitpalalti bo b'yom chamishi Shisha Yamim L'Yerach Mar Cheshvan. Says, he went to the Bayit ha'gadol in Yerushalayim and davened there on a Thursday. ובחד בשבת, תשעה בחודש, יצאתי מירושלים לחברון, לנשק קברי אבותיי במערה. He went to Hebron. ואותו ים עמדתי במערה, ומתפללתי שבח להתברך, etc., etc., etc. Okay, now what's important about this line?
He doesn't hold his intrinsic kedusha in the Beit HaMikdash. He went in.
It's more severe than that. This is what makes this whole letter up for dispute. The Rambam holds that you're not allowed to go on Har Bayit. It's kares. So if he did write this letter, then what did he mean when he said "Nichnasti lebayit hagadol v'akadosh"? Now he could be referring to something completely different. Maybe not referring to the Beit HaMikdash. I have no idea. Or he could be referring to a spot there that's not problematic. But this is why it throws the whole letter into question. There are those that dispute that he actually wrote this letter because it seems strange that the Rambam would have gone there. But that's what I wanted to show you all, and something to keep in mind on this coming Yom Yerushalayim. Haba aleinu tova. Erev tov, Shabbat shalom.
Very nice. Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah. Very well done. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.